Welcome to the PeopleStack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and architect of the PeopleStack. My guests for this episode are Jessica Weiss. She is COO of Soapbox, and Brennan McEachran. He is CEO and co-founder of Soapbox. Welcome, Jessica. Welcome, Brennan.
Hi there. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, I'm so super excited to connect with you guys again and talk all about Soapbox and having great conversations between managers and individual contributors and all that stuff. But first, let's start at the beginning so that folks can know a little bit about what Soapbox is. So Brennan, why don't you kick us off? Tell us a little bit about Soapbox and how it really kind of helps managers to communicate better.
Yeah, awesome. So Soapbox is, you know, simply put, an app and assistant or chatbot that helps managers have better one-on-ones and team meetings, as well as companies having better town halls and things like that with their team. So we like to think of it as all the little employee engagement activities that managers do, we're kind of the app and the assistant to help them do that. And then I think the interesting take on you know, employee engagement that we take is most apps that are out there, most platforms that are out there are, you know, these engagement platforms that are built for HR and HR teams. And our take or our twist that's different is, you know, I like to think of us as the first one built for managers. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you guys know the stats or heard the sayings that people leave managers, not companies. But the stats are the same, right? So 70% of those engagement scores are based on your direct manager, not actually the company or the HR team. So we really exist to give managers those tools that help them become better managers that people want to stick with and be led by and do a great job for. So that's Soapbox. We're the platform to do that.
All right. Excellent. Jessica, what do you have to add to that? What's your take on it?
I'll add that is exactly what the specific app does. And then I'll bring it up to kind of like what I would say is our world mission, our raison d'etre, which is to change the way the work world is. And that is then driven through this bit of technology and the sprinkle and sparkle of stuff around it. So the messaging we have, the education and the guidance, and then, of course, it's all baked back into the app. And so specifically, though, how we think about how the work world needs to change, it's about putting people front and center. It's not about the work. Gone are the days of this industrial era, machine-like, factory style of do this, do that, right? Mm-hmm. Here today is the era of communications that goes top down, up, you know, bottoms up, sideways in all directions and around your head, 24/7. And the need for creativity, for collaboration, for pace. And this is not just startup world. This is everyone, GE and the massive big corporates thinking about how they are more agile, how they are faster to market, et cetera. And so how do you enable that? Well, it's not a CRM. It's not a project plan. It's through your people. And we've got a whole whack of tools and technology and approaches even to say, well, this is how you should work and do your activities. And Soapbox's stance is, yeah, okay, but what's the tools and the technology and the best practices around how do you work with the people and how do you bring the most important asset in any organization, which is its people, mm-hmm. To realize their performance? Mm-hmm. So that's for what gets us out of bed every morning and gets me so excited around, like, your podcast is exactly what we love and talk about every day.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm so, I mean, it just means that there's, you know, we're filling needs. We're filling needs that are out there that people are talking about anyway. And so let's give people an outlet to talk and listen and really put people front and center. So I love how both of you kind of started with the why, you know, like this is about employee engagement. This is about changing the way the world works, putting people first, increasing creativity, collaboration. And so that's, I think that's so, so important. But I do think that some folks may be wondering about the what. Okay, I get that it's not a CRM. Yeah. I get that it's for managers and not HR. And so, Brennan, you mentioned that it's a chatbot. So I think most of us can kind of wrap our heads around what that might mean. But can you go into a little bit more detail about how all this magic happens?
Yeah, so I'll start at maybe the lowest end of our app. So there's a free part and a paid part. So the free and what you get for free, free version of Soapbox is really a chatbot and a tool and a safe place to have one-on-one conversations with your manager or with your direct reports. And so, you know, especially in the technology industry, I think we all, you know, value those one-on-one meetings as a sacred, safe place where we can talk about, you know, sure, not only the work and the work environment, but also about ourselves and each other and how to make work better. And so what we realized is, hey, if this is a key place that, you know, feedback happens, and this is a key place that kind of engagement happens, this is a place that we should be a part of and exist. And so the chatbot is there to help facilitate having a great agenda for that meeting, both by suggesting really awesome questions to employees and really awesome questions to managers to create that safe environment and that fun environment where you can have a great conversation with your manager. Mm-hmm. But then it also does little things like remind you to you know, follow up on your next steps and take notes and do all of that. Those things that are really not rocket science, but are the difference maker in, I think, being a really great boss that you brag to your friends about, or, you know, just that, mm-hmm. the average boss that shows up to work. And we do the exact same thing for team meetings. So if those are the two areas where managers, I think, are able to flex their employee engagement muscles the most, we kind of exist to help them do that 10x better. And then Soapbox also has a ton of really great, really powerful features that help leaders who maybe manage other managers or manage departments or manage, business units do the same thing. But I would say just with more of a, you know, wider lens, thinking about large groups of people. Mm-hmm. So then, and then, of course, we do the dashboards and all that fun stuff that you would expect. Mm-hmm. But that's maybe hopefully a little better view of like exactly what the heck we're talking about.
Yeah, that's great. And I know that the Slack integration seems to be a big part of it. So that's been like I've been playing with it lately, kind of getting to see, you know, what is this all about? And it seems like the Slack integration is, especially if you're someone who uses Slack on a regular basis anyway, that really is an important part of it. So is that part of the thinking that you guys were thinking about, Brennan? Like, okay, we want to make sure that this integrates seamlessly with tools that people are using already anyway.
I mean, yeah, you got it, right? Like everyone is, I think, today in business feels the same way. We don't want another place to go or another tool to have. And especially when we think of something that's very human, like having a one-on-one meeting with your employees, you don't necessarily want to force those people to use a new tool. But as a manager, there is a lot of one-on-ones happening and they take up a lot of time and you want to make sure you do a good job of them. And so the bot became this really, insightful little, tool, or like, you know, Jess and I talk about it as the manager's sidekick. That's kind of there as like, you know, your Batman and this is Robin just helping you do kind of the little things that add up and make a big difference. Yeah. But interestingly, it didn't necessarily start that way. It started the traditional, I think, startup way of like, this is a really easy MVP, right? Like we don't have to design anything if we do a bot. Mm-hmm. We can just have a bot that does the minimum viable tasks that and helps you do the minimum viable tasks mm-hmm. That you need to do. And so the bot was a really great way for us to test, hey, is this thing even worth doing? And And it exploded and went crazy, and people started using it all over the place. And we realized, I think, after the fact that, no, this is the main way I think people want to interact with the tool is through the Slack bot. And, you know, we're launching, Microsoft Teams just launched. So different chat clients, different ways that people already work. The idea is that, you know, the sidekick is there with you.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And it seems, in terms of thinking of it as like my sidekick, like, hey, I'll make sure the bot is there to make sure I don't forget about following up with so-and-so or forget about setting agenda for that meeting. It's nice to know that there's somebody or a bot, at least, is kind of taking care of that stuff. That's something for me that's huge. So then I can focus on the big stuff as opposed to all the little things. So one of the things that I want to talk about a little bit more is essentially conversations, manager, employee, and conversations, because that's really at the heart of what I think one of the things that we're talking about here is making sure that those conversations are as productive and as effective, as open, as vulnerable as they can be, and be really good conversations. And so, Jessica, I know, you know, this is one of the things that you had mentioned, something that you wanted to chime in on and talk about. And I think it's a really, really important topic. So from your vantage point, Jessica, how do we go about building that trust that's necessary in order to have these open conversations and these vulnerable conversations?
Oh, so many ways. Now you're going to make me like do it in like a 1, 2, 3. We're both totally with you on that is the crux of what needs to happen. And back to your earlier point with Soapbox, we take away, you know, the administrative stuff so that you can focus on the human elements, mm-hmm. the stuff that requires the people and not the technology, you know, take those tasks on for you. And so when you are now in a conversation with somebody and you're focusing on that human vulnerable element, I find a few ways. Really helps create that deeper connection, I think, a more honest connection and interaction. The first is, and it's been actually very interesting, a discovery, as I've talked with tens and hundreds of people leaders and asked about their approaches, is inviting and being explicit about the conversations you want to have or the feedback or the input that you desire. I was talking to a VP a few weeks ago, and he was lamenting how somebody on his team hadn't come to him with a really big, important piece of information. And he said, well, you know, after they had had that conversation, when it was a little dated that the information came out, he said, well, why didn't you come and share this with me earlier? And the person said, well, I didn't know I could. And this VP was floored because he said, you know, we've always had open conversations. When have I never? And he, you know, stalked you. And he considers himself a very approachable person. And mm-hmm. I think many of us think of ourselves as approachable, right? You'd be open to hearing anything. And the employee's retort, when he said, well, I've never told you you couldn't, mm-hmm. he said, but you never said I could. And that for him was the kicker, and I think that's the thing, which is being explicit to say these are the conversations I want us to be having. Mm-hmm. And I had this with an employee of mine where I know that we are shifting around her role, and it creates career ambiguity, and I though also really 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 love her and desire her and want her on the team, and so I said, listen. If this ever like creeps up to where you're like, I'm looking at job postings because I just can't handle this amount of change or whatever, I want to know. Mm-hmm. And that's a risk for me to broach the subject, but I think so, so, so much more important to make sure that channel of communication is open. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that's one, and then two, and then I'm curious, B, what else you'll have. But the second one is being open yourself. So in the theory of change management or what have you, there's this whole notion of an iceberg and the information that lies below the waterline. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about an iceberg, you only see the tip of it, and there's this big, massive 70-80% of the iceberg that lives below the water, and you don't even have a perception of what's there. And so when doing, especially one-on-ones or even in a group setting, what you want to do is lower the waterline. And the best way to do that is taking the first step. And so I'm really open with my team. I tell them when I'm frustrated. I share when I'm feeling nervous. I even just open up meetings when I know that I'm going to be low energy, and I share, I'm feeling low energy. I'm tired. Don't take this as I'm cheesed or annoyed. I'm just not going to be as enthusiastic as I always am or always try to be and want to be. And so lowering the waterline, being open and vulnerable yourself makes people feel safe that they can then also join in. It's always like, if you're not sharing, well, why should I, right? Mm-hmm. So as a manager, I take the first step.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear on those two. So being explicit about the conversation you want to be having with your team, don't just assume that they're going to come in and have those conversations. Give them explicit sort of, I want to talk about. And then being open and vulnerable yourself. I love the lower the waterline metaphor. Let's see what lies beneath. Let's see what's underneath the tip of this iceberg. And that means being open yourself, and that opens it up to other people. It creates that space for other people to be vulnerable as well. Yep, absolutely. So yeah, Brennan, I'm curious, do you have anything to add to that in terms of building trust, having open, vulnerable conversations?
I know, I think those were the two that immediately popped into my head, was the same thing of explicitly asking, and Jess and I were even talking about this over lunch. Being explicit is huge. Being vulnerable first, and I think being as a manager, being really reflective about, like, you know, you're a human too, and so the things you're working on, sharing that with your directs is helpful for them to know, like, oh, it's okay to, like, not be perfect. It's okay to get better. One of the best, and actually I will say that the one of the interesting things we've learned with the bot is because the bot suggests questions that help you bring some of these things out, that people sometimes are able to have these conversations because the bot is the icebreaker and helps lower the line. And they're like, you know, I was never going to ask you this question, but the bot said it would be good, and so maybe we should talk about it. But the most interesting thing I think I've learned about management is just really just a metaphor about dog training. And I have two dogs back at home. And so when we were house training those two dogs, one of the things, you know, they tell you or you learn is, you know, you come home from a long day at work and you're tired and hungry, and, you know, you have this puppy who really can't hold his or her bladder long enough for you to go through the work day. And so you're going to come home one day and there's going to be pee on the floor, and that sucks. And you're going to be angry, and you're not going to be, you know, in the right state of mind to, like, be patient. And you're likely going to yell at this poor innocent little creature. And dogs being the sweet, perfect animals they are, they're going to sit there and say, like, oh man, like, this is bad. Like, I don't want my human owner to feel this way. So the next time, you know, I really have to go pee, I'm going to do it in a place where the person can't find it, because clearly them finding, you know, my pee is bad. So I'm going to go under the bed, or I'm going to go behind the couch, because then that avoids this person getting upset. And I'm not saying at all that the manager-employee relationship is exactly like that, but there are situations where accidents happen. And I think when that happens, and if you have explicitly invited that person to say, hey, if there is a scenario where you've screwed up, I'd rather you, and in fact, I want you to bring it to me as fast as you can, I think it's important to say thank you and not to scold them, and not to remind them about it, not to bully them about it, not to, you know, publicly say this person screwed up. I think it's a big deal to reward them for doing the right thing and help them out in that situation. so that, you know, you do start building a habit of those good behaviors that you want. And I think more often than not, as tired, hungry managers, we find ourselves in situations where 13 things have gone wrong, and then this person is talking to us at 5 p.m. about, you know, the latest, greatest accident that happened in the workplace. And I think that's the time when, you know, maybe you have no patience, but you have to say, like, it's going to be okay. Thanks for bringing this up. Let's talk about it. And if it is that employee that we don't want to quit, and they do bring it up and they say, hey, you know, I am starting to look at job postings. Like, thank you for telling me. Yeah. Now it's something that we can deal with and not, you know, brush under the rug. So I think it's one of the harder human things to do, but one of the great manager things you can do.
Yeah, that's a great third one to add to the list, that team members may, like a dog, may want to hide their accidents. So creating an atmosphere, yeah, having those conversations so that they're not going to be prone to do that. Hey, tell me as soon as possible and we'll work through it. I'd rather you do that than hide it. Yep. So let's shift the conversation just a little bit. And so, Brennan, I'm curious your thoughts on this one, because I know that I have a lot of listeners out there, some of who are people managers, and some of who manage people manager. There a lot of, or maybe some of them manage dogs. I was going to say maybe some of them manage people, maybe some of them manage dogs. But some of them who are, certainly that could be the case. But really what we're talking about are people who are managers of managers versus the people who are managers of, like, individual contributors, frontline contributors. And so that's kind of a difference in context. So we've been kind of talking about managers from kind of a generic perspective up to this point. We're talking about your team members. But I'm curious your thoughts, Brennan, on what might be the difference, and what's the difference between managing other people managers, you know, being a manager of managers, versus managing frontline contributors?
I think it's a great question. It's a hard question too, because I think, you know, at the crux of it is people, and every person's different. So part of it is, like, how do you figure out each individual's motivation, and how do you, you know, put that tool in your tool chest? And then the other thing is, I think at different levels, it becomes even more different, right? Like managing a manager who deals with frontline employees versus managing someone who's a VP, or like Jess, I like to say with Jess, she's CEO of Soapbox. So the way I like to describe that is, I'm the type of CEO who needs a COO. And it's more about how do I have Jess help manage me than me manage Jess. And I think it does change as you kind of go up the org chart, and there's almost, you get to a point where there's less managing down and more managing up, and more managing side to side, and really people kind of taking over, you know, different lines of businesses and things. But I think it's a great question. And I think the best piece of advice I've gotten for it is the questions you're likely asking your boss, the questions you're bringing up in your one-on-one with your manager, how do you get that person's frontline contributors to ask you those same questions? So if you're worried about the viability of the business, if you're worried about, you know, this person's strategy, or you're worried about, you know, who's assigned to what or who's directly responsible for this, how do you, as a manager of a people manager, how do you get that person's employees to ask them those same questions? Mm-hmm. And I think the trick there is, it's less about cause and effect, I think. And this is maybe a little bit where patience comes in, and it's a little bit more about, I think, about, you know, correlation and derivative functions and things like that. But you do have, like, a slower feedback loop there. And so, so you're going to test some things, and you're going to see if the right things pop out. But, it's more about, I think, in scaling, those people to be more like you, and in scaling their people to be more like them, and, what the right way to do that is. So, versus, I think, when you're a manager of frontline contributors, I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, how do I enable these people to be very productive, and how do I remove their blockers? The next level, I think, is the hardest level, because after that, it more or less starts getting easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I loved the way of thinking about it when you were talking about managing people and managers, that it's not cause and effect. If you're thinking of it in terms of if X, then Y, especially when you're a manager of managers, you know, and higher up, it doesn't work that way. I totally hear you
exactly.
on the patience thing. It's more like correlation. So if you think of like a scatter plot, X-axis, Y-axis, whole bunch
exactly.
of dots, it's like chaos, but you find that line of best fit. That's a correlation there. That's what being a people manager is like. It's looking for, you know, finding
exactly
that
chaos,
finding the order in the chaos versus like the individual being a manager of individual contributors. I don't know. Is it more cause and effecty? I don't know. Maybe it is, but I like the way that you framed it. It's more about, it's like this one thing. How do I make my team productive? How do I remove the blockers?
It can be, yeah. right? Like it can yeah. be more cause and effect. You can definitely just demand things. And I'm not saying it's a good thing, but you can definitely just brute force your way through certain problems when you're managing individual contributors.
I think that you're also, because you're talking about different things as well, to what you were saying, which is with the individual contributors, you're talking about how do you get your job done, right? So they're staying within their own sphere, right? And it's like a very contained sphere of control. And it's like, okay, I'm going to make you the most effective person possible, whether we're talking about your career or just how do you send the best email. And then when I find when I'm talking to my people leaders, I focus less on the activities and the task at hand, because that's for them, they're good at it. I trust you can write emails and you're just going to get your stuff done. We're talking about how do they lead and influence their people, because they're learning. I think that's a big thing of especially when you're managing first-time managers. My job as a leader of people managers mm-hmm. is to build up their skills in people management. Mm-hmm. And then you're also talking about more so strategy. So my mm-hmm. big focus is to say, do you get why we're doing stuff? And then therefore what needs to happen? So the thing I don't trust or that isn't a given, I know how you can do your individual job, but can you set the direction? Can you make the right call for the next 2-3 weeks, 5 months out, and can you prioritize, can you make those judgments? And that's, I think, where you start to get a little bit more abstract, and it's not always going to be like, okay, cool, we did this one thing today, and we resolved it. It's skill building more so, and how do you lead people, but also how do you be a business leader of making decisions, setting strategy, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that absolutely, it can be much more abstract, which is harder to do. You don't get that immediate sort of rush of yay, this worked, you know, right away. It takes more time to kind of see, okay, how did that work? Okay, let's keep going. And it's really more about like the way that I like to think of it as kind of a mentor of mentors, you know? So if you're leading people leaders, it's kind of like you're their mentors, but you want to check in on their mentoring, you know, kind of like what Brennan was mentioning too. It's like, what questions should they be asking to their team members and how can you guide them to do that? Is sort of like,
100%.
Yeah, you know, and it's sort of like is asking those questions and then just is taking a step back and not just saying, okay, go do 1, 2, 3. You know, it's more about, mm-hmm. I have a question for you. Does that resonate? You know, I don't know how many times I must ask my clients, does that resonate with you? And if it doesn't, all right, let's take a different tactic. And it's really more about actually sometimes just shutting the heck up and just leaving that space for them to like kind of ponder after you ask the question on that. That's how the relationships can kind of really go to a deeper level. And also, you know, with individual contributors as well. But I think even more important with the people leaders. So yeah, thanks for chiming in there. Jessica, do you have anything else to add, or Brennan, do you have anything else to add there?
Yeah, I want to jump in. I think it's an interesting, the people manager thing is just really interesting. It's obviously something that like Jess and I and the team spend a lot of time talking about and smashing our heads against the wall. I think it sometimes goes overlooked that if you're a really good developer, sometimes you become, you know, the engineering manager or something like that, or good salesperson becomes the, you know, the sales manager. And, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes they're battlefield promotions and sometimes they're, you know, you fought for it and you've earned it. And sometimes we think of them as promotions when I really think they should be thought of as like midlife career changes. Mm-hmm. And you go from doing something like closing deals or going something, you know, like shipping code, to your job is now people. Your job is not shipping code. Your job is ensuring your people can ship code, or close deals. And I think that the first thing that, you know, I think about and go through is like, how do you ensure that that person is spending time to make sure that those things happen? And a lot of it is like making space in the calendar that they're prioritizing just people stuff. And so, you know, I was looking at stats the other day, 12-15% of, you know, the average manager's time, at least in the tech sector, is inside of one-on-one meetings. Mm-hmm. And if you think of it, it's like about one day of your week is sitting inside of a meeting where it's just you and someone else. And that doesn't include peer to peer. That doesn't include up to down. That doesn't include, you know, team. And so when you think about it, you go from, you know, your stereotypical great developers, headphones on, pushing great code all the time. Mm-hmm. Or your stereotypical sales rep is outside the office closing deals all the time, mm-hmm. to someone who it should be known for sitting down with people internally. And that's a big shift to make in your first 30, 60, 90 days as a people manager. And that's hard. That's not an easy, mm-hmm. easy shift. So recognizing that is like one of the first steps, I think, of, you know, hey, this is my job now. And these are new skills I have to develop and learn. And certainly I can coach people because I'm good at the stuff they're doing, but my job is not doing that. It's in coaching that. So take a step off the field, you know, go on the sidelines. And that's hard. I don't know if there's, I don't have any, you know, easy quick hacks other than just recognizing that, with your people manager.
Yeah.
Especially new ones.
Absolutely. That it fundamentally, your day fundamentally changes from either, you know, being on the phone all day if you're a sales rep or being in front of the computer all day if you're a developer, to having different kinds of conversations with people. And I think, just recognizing that and saying, okay, my day is going to be different now. And there's going to be this like kind of pull back to what it was before. Like, oh, no. I want to go to the code. Nope. You know, that's not my job anymore. Maybe a little bit, but you know, it's actually my job to guide them through it and not just kind of bulldoze them and write the code. That's their job. So that's an excellent point. Just recognizing that piece, that it's a fundamental shift in the way that your days are going to unfold because your responsibilities have fundamentally shifted as well. Hey there, folks. We'll get back to the interview in two shakes of a lamb's tail. But first, are you a tech manager? Is leading your team like herding cats? Are you sick of making stuff up without trusted systems to guide you? Are your days filled with useless, time-sucking meetings? Join my Facebook group with other tech geeks who are coming together to build thriving, high-performing teams who don't need constant hand-holding. No HR BS, just real stories from real geeks who understand the nuances of being a techie. To join us, go to genbunk.com/Facebook. Without further ado, please enjoy the remainder of the interview. So what we're going to do at this point is we will shift to the last question, Jessica and Brennan. So Jessica, I'll let you go first. This is the question that I ask all of my podcast guests, and it is, what is the biggest people-related challenge in your job? So Jessica, what's it for you?
Right now or in general? Because the funny bit and the interesting bit is I think it changes week to week, month to month, quarter and year by year. I would say right now it's mm-hmm. a tie between getting my employees comfortable, getting my team comfortable managing up, giving the time and attention needed to certain people so that they can level up. And so on the managing up, we're in a very, as I feel like always, but just maybe now, especially very, 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 very busy time. Mm-hmm. And so my attention, I'm not going to be tracking people down and being like, hey, did this happen? Or just sitting around casually at my desk because it's just go, 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 go. Mm-hmm. And so what I've made explicit to my team is, hey, you guys have to manage up. If you need something done because it helps you achieve your goals, you need to make sure you're in my face, nudging me, getting it done, getting your input, because sort of just waiting around or waiting till it comes up or kind of being also perhaps respectful of, well, I don't want to overwhelm, isn't going to help us and nor help them. Mm-hmm. So this whole notion of managing up, tell me what you need. Tell me both from a work input, unlocking roadblocks, but also from a feedback coaching development perspective, I need to hear that proactively from them so then I can address those needs as opposed to trying to take the initiative on my own to say, hey, what are your needs and constantly checking in. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of relates to the second thing, which is because I'm don't have as much time, and you know, there is a difference between managing people leaders versus managing individual contributors. Spending the time to make sure that folks have the guidance and the coaching. And so what I've found really helpful is because I feel like I'm the worst manager. Like I feel like I'm not giving what people need to be successful. And I know that I'm not. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't help them, myself, or the business. And I just feel yucky. Mm-hmm. And so what I've found really helpful is setting up those proactively setting up those times where I say, okay, this is the time where I'm going to give you coaching and this is the time we're going to work through problems. So that then it's in the calendar, it's set, and it becomes sacred. And then we address the challenge of, folks falling behind or not, and also not getting what they need. So both managing up and me having the capacity to manage down, trying to solve that with getting them being more, explicit around, I need you to come to me with these things, but then also making time in the calendar for us to connect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can't tell you the number of times that I've been approached by individual contributors. So the main thing that I do is I help managers. I do get folks who are individual contributors. Hey, can you tell me how to manage up? And I think that it's like do it, like just do it, right? Are you doing it at all? And it's great to know that you're the kind of manager that's like, hey, go ahead, tell me, put it in my face. I'm actually, I couldn't be overwhelmed with something else and I'm not going to hear about it unless you tell me. So I think, that's kind of the two-way street. It's like, okay, if you're the individual contributor, it's like, okay, you have to do it. You have to manage up. But if you're the manager, you got to be open to it and remind them. And as long as you keep those communication lines open, that works. And I appreciate you being so open and honest there, Jessica. Startup, overwhelming, you're busy. And I could tell that kind of thing comes through with your team as well, as you were mentioning. And so that then they become kind of more open to saying, yeah, you know what? Bad day. Don't bring that up or whatever it might be. So that's very, very cool.
They still bring it up, but then they just couch it with, I know you're really tired, but,
Yeah, that works too. That works too.
Exactly. Exactly. It's funny though, that the whole managing up piece around, I think it's got a little bit of like a Machiavellian, like negative tinge to it, mm-hmm. right? Where it's like, well, you're really just fighting for yourself and you're being, perhaps even to a great degree manipulative. And I think it's quite the opposite. I think this is what the employee needs to do for their own personal success. So I would champion to say, listen, you've got goals and desires, and you also just want to feel good and proud of what you're doing. So get the support and help you need. That is a beautiful and brave and positive thing to do. And then second, it's what the business needs, because whether you're in a startup or a 50,000 person organization, every individual matters. And if they're not contributing to their full potential, then the people that are accountable for them, to Brennan's point, which is the people manager, need to know. And they need to be there. That is their number one job, to be there and be helpful. And the employee giving that gift to the manager to say, this is where I need help, it is truly a gift. It is an important thing to do for their own career and success, as well as, you know, as well as the business success.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's my pitch for managing up.
Absolutely. Agree with you 100% there. Totally with you on that, Jessica. All right,
and
Brennan.
I will.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll definitely echo that. And I will say, you know, I think it goes much farther beyond just, you know, you managing your manager. Like, I mean, you know, for every startup founder out there, as I get into like my people challenges, if you're not managing up your board, like, good luck at your board meeting. You know, these board members, these investors that you have, you know, whoever they are, you for sure should do basically the same thing, maybe on a slightly, you know, less intense cadence. But you're doing the exact same things that you would, you know, want to do with your manager. You're, you know, if you're going to bring up, you know, any big challenges, we talked about this not too long ago, you know, pre-flighting it, right? Like, you should talk to each board member before you bring something up in a board meeting. If it's the first time they're hearing about a major decision, you, as you know, as a CEO, have done a bad job managing that board. And it's going to make your board meeting suck. So don't do it, right? Like, just do the pre-work you need to do in order to make your life, you know, happier.
I think
that's something that you learn, and once you learn it, you're like, man, this is just all about, you know, making everyone's life more peaceful and happier, and like, this is just insane not to do it. My biggest people-related challenge, I think, is more about me, and maybe this is just how I think about things, but I think as like the CEO, founder of the company, there's way less excuses that I'm able to tell myself as I fall asleep at night, because there shouldn't be. And so the way I think about it is really just about being self-reflective. And, you know, each person works differently. Each person has different motivations. Each person needs different things. And all of those different people have to work together as one unit to do what we want and what the business needs. And so, okay, she's holding in a cup. There's the cup. Thank you, Rob. And so as each, you know, as each individual manager is leading each individual person, the way, you know, I think about the business is, you know, when I'm able to scale myself, the business is able to scale. And so, you know, we kind of, I definitely figured out how to be a one-person shop. I think that's, you know, easy for me, and three people was fine, and 10 people took a little while, but we got there. And then it got to the point where it's like, oh crap, I lead people leaders. And that was the biggest roadblock. And so, you know, the first time founder, I'm doing the things, you know, the hard way, and learning things the hard way. And so my biggest people related thing is just like, how do I, as a manager, as a leader, scale? And I find that the faster I'm able to scale, the faster, you know, the whole company is able to scale. So, so my biggest one is what are the things that I don't know about management, or what are the things that I don't know about the team or leading the team that, you know, I should know, or I should be doing, that would enable them to go faster.
Okay.
And I think, again, maybe that's a unique, CEO founder thing, but, you know, there's really no excuse. I should be involved in the product. I should be involved in every deal if I can be. And I, you know, I should have opinions about every page on the website, and I should care about, you know, is the code properly formatted in the app and on the website, and is the, you know, are the drop shadows the right blur? And I care about some of these things, which are stupid, but maybe I should, right? And so how do I scale some of those opinions is some of the stuff that I think about.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you loud and clear in that, Brennan. And it's definitely a theme that's come up on this podcast before in terms of, you know, like you said, being self-reflective, scaling myself, you know, being the best leader possible. Some people talk about it in terms of just being the best version of myself possible. How do I learn? How do I grow? How do I learn more about myself in terms of skills, but also just in terms of how I can show up as the best leader every day? I want to ask you something, Brennan, just because this kind of comes up sometimes when we talk about these kinds of things, like being the best leader possible. And do you have any daily rituals that kind of support that? You know, some folks talk about mindfulness stuff. Some folks talk about, you know, always doing something related to learning and growth every day, or maybe it's just kind of checking in with yourself or your team. So do you have any, like, are there any behaviors or rituals that you follow on a semi-regular basis to help you to kind of meet that goal of being the best leader possible?
I would say I have one, which is like a very sacred cult-like ritual thing, which I talk about like I'm part of a sacred cult-like ritual, which is I have this founders forum, which I go to. And so I kind of think of it like a group-based one-on-one. But as, you know, founder CEO, you don't have a manager to you're certainly not talking to your, you know, your board about your feelings. So I go to a group of 10 people that are also founder CEOs. And we kind of open up to each other and, you know, no judgment. We do that once a month and, you know, do a retreat. And it's very much like Alcoholics Anonymous for startup founders, yeah. Where, you know, we just get to experience other people going through the same things, we experience. And so that's helpful. And I think it's good even just to know that other people are dealing with the same things you're dealing with. And you get closer to those people and they can help you out if there is a specific thing. But sometimes the specific thing is just like you're tired, right? Yeah. And so it's good to have someone to talk about, you know, how tired you know, and you know, they say, I'm tired too, or whatever it is when, you know, work and life are blurring together and someone feels the same way about it. So that's one thing, you know, I would say everyone should have. And I think it's I think of it very cult-like, but in a good way, and that's like a ritual that our cult does. The other thing I think, just as you were talking about scaling yourself, being the best leader you can is also about just recognizing, you know, what areas of leadership you're not so great at, and just making sure that still gets done, even if you're not good at it. You know, if you learn that you're not the type of leader that is good at, you know, remembering all the fine, you know, details, then you get a COO named Jess, and that's awesome. Fine, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, right? And she stresses about all the you know, Gantt charts, and that's awesome. So, mm-hmm. I think it comes down to some of those things as well. That's not a ritual, but we hang out a lot.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that, Brennan. Excellent points. So Jessica, anything you want to add to that, just in terms of, you know, rituals, being a better leader, or anything else that you wanted to bring up in terms of summing up or anything on your mind right now?
I have two things.
Yes.
On the rituals, I would say for me, it's I'm not good at keeping daily, every day, do the same thing habit. What I find is I have my tool chest and I go into it as I need it, depending on where I'm at, what cycle I'm in, a high and a low, a frazzled or what have you. And so whether it be journaling, whether it be making sure I go to the gym, whether it be making, you know, eating well, putting myself to sleep early, talking with friends, going to my farm, which was also like therapy. All of those tools in that tool chest keep me, as calm, I would say, and clear-headed as possible, which then allows me to be reflective and think to myself around what's happening. And then I can start, when I'm in a good state, then I can take care of other people. So it's definitely, I definitely believe in the whole airplane, put your face mask, air mask on first, mm-hmm. Take care of yourself, because then that's when I start thinking, oh, you know what, that person, they need this. And I, you know, I should bring it up tomorrow, or we need to start hiring for this team because, you know, this person's getting overwhelmed. When I, that only happens when I'm clear-headed and focused and have taken care of myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can get crazy.
And I love that you brought up that you have this tool chest and it doesn't always have to be the same thing every day. I think for especially yeah. folks who return to variety, you know, some of us return more to the constants. Okay, I want to have these things, the same thing every day. And I like that. There's a security in that. But for some people, it's like, oh, that's boring. And like to think of it in terms of the tool chest, in that there are things that I do on a semi-regular basis, maybe it's every day, but I don't. It doesn't have to look the same every single day. It's like, okay, what do I need today? Do I need a massage? Do I need to journal some more? You know, do I need to go out with friends or whatever? And that you just make sure that you stay mindful of what are the things that are going to help me today, and that way you can add some variety to it. So I think that's a great way of thinking about it for the folks who are like, ugh, meditating every day? Oh, that sounds so boring. You know what I mean? Although that can be a great way of doing it, that this is another way to do it too. Two different ways to achieve the same outcome.
Totally. And I would say, and this relates to the second point, sort of like summing up and sort of thinking about the theme that we've talked about, is I don't know if there's anybody out there that does the exact same thing and the same ritual for their life. Like Tim Ferriss can write blogs and books full of that stuff. And I think it serves a really valuable purpose, but I don't believe that that is the only way that these people operate. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge that a lot of, and we talk about this, is that I don't think that there is the Seth Godin of people leadership. Like there is no kind of really pushing the boundaries envelope and really challenging, I'll call it the norms of how we talk about doing things. And I think a lot of the ways that we talk about people leadership is we set these individuals up on pedestals and say, oh my gosh, these are their five habits that they do every morning. And oh my gosh, I like can never be like that person. Whatever. There's like, I think it's not true. It can't be. Because they're not human. And for us at Soapbox, and I think we've spent a good amount of time talking about humans. We err. We have insecurities. We have vulnerabilities. We have feelings. We have emotions. We have good days. We have bad days. We have days where we're just pooped. And and being, seeing that in your employees and seeing that in yourself, and creating an environment where humans can then be themselves and then thrive and be more productive, that is when things start humming. That is the source of a great organization to be part of that can add value back to this world. And that includes hitting financial goals and anything else that you're trying to accomplish. And so, when we talk about how do you create vulnerable organizations, how do you manage people, what are your rituals and hacks and stuff, it's about, I think, remembering the humanness of these interactions.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point to bring us home, Jessica, and kind of going back to putting people front and center. That really you have to do that, you know, put your money, put your actions, put your behaviors, put your attitudes where your mouth is. If people are really front and center, then you got to do that. And it's not easy because people are hard. People change.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome.
You can control project plans, but people, it's really hard. So we've solved the project plan piece and the CRM, you know, the customer lifecycle.
Sure.
The human piece. We're figuring that one out.
Yeah, that's the tough one. We have not figured out that there's no magic. There's no magic wand here. We're all just figuring it out together one step at a time.
Totally.
All right. Awesome. So we are just about up on time. Thank you again, Jessica. Thank you, Brennan, so much for an awesome conversation. And I look forward to many other awesome conversations with you guys in the future. Again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Talk soon.